Blog Talk Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the only pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners, will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood? I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racist, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification. One day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain. And the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed. And all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
You are listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney Show, and I am Reverend Edward Pinckney. But before I bring on my brother Larry Pinckney, I want to read a little something that he sent me in reference to this article. The article reads, "The teenager, William O'Neill, in 1968, could avoid a felony charge for interstate kidnapping and for impersonating a federal officer if he agreed to assist in the construction of a narrative agreed to be a reliable, a reliable informer. So the young O'Neill joined the Black Panthers in Chicago and moved through the ranks to become the director of chapter security and the bodyguard of the chapter chairman, Fred Hampton. O'Neill is the informant who not only drug Hampton, but also provided the FBI with a floor plan of the apartment. Years after the police raided on the apartment where Fred Hampton was murdered in his sleep, the 40-year-old O'Neill in 1990 ran from his uncle's apartment into the westbound lane of the Eisenhower Expressway and was struck by a car. His death was ruled a suicide. The young nephew, his uncle, told the press witness in the aftermath of the police raid the morning after, and he was shocked. Bill just stood there in shock. He never thought it would come to all this. He just thought he would cooperate to reduce his own potential jail time, but he was way over his head and forever tortured by the guilt. Similar characters like O'Neill from California to Pine Ridge, New York, vulnerable and petty criminals, has been useful as reliable narratives for the criminal justice system in the United States, corroborating to the fine-tune of terrorist narrative of reliable propagandists among the target and the listed. Maybe most live their lives tortured by guilt, but this is just one of many cases where the FBI used informants to infiltrate organizations and to destroy people. Larry Pinkney, are you there?
Yes, I am, my brother. Very good to hear your voice.
I was reading your article, but it didn't print well, but I think I got most of it out that you can understand. But maybe you can elaborate on that just a little bit for us. Tell us a little bit about that article, if you can.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me give all due credit to Sister Lenore,
mm-hmm.
because she was actually one. I wrote a different article, but it was similar. But Dr. Lenore Jean Daniels did a fantastic job. And what she was, basically saying is just what you said, and that is that the government, be it the FBI, be it the CIA, be it the National Security Agency, be it the Drug Enforcement Agency, be it any one of over 15 intelligence and police agents, government intelligence and police agencies in this country, what they do is they use people who are closest to you to destroy you, to set you up, to frame you, to imprison you, and yes, to outright murder you. And that's the example that was being used, that you were citing, where this guy, whose last name is O'Neill, had basically gotten a rap for a criminal rap for car theft. And the police and FBI in Chicago came together and said, look here, you work for us. We're going to take care of you. Don't worry about it. You won't have to worry about, doing any time or just be a little bit. Don't worry about it. So this is all we want you to do. We just want you to join the Black Panther Party, become, be an informant, and feed us information. Well, the youngster who was 18 or 19 at the time, O'Neill, went along with the program, all right, and joined the Black Panther Party, was an informant to the police and FBI, and went so far as to drug the chapter leader, who was Fred Hampton, drugged him. So when Fred went to sleep, he was drugged. He had been drugged by this O'Neill and probably put something in his drink or, something that he was drinking or something in his food. In any event, the long story short is this. This guy, O'Neill, also, who, by the way, had become the head of that chapter of security and was very trusted, also actually drew a floor plan showing the layout of the apartment that Fred Hampton and Mark Clark and other
brothers and sisters, Panthers were sleeping in and staying in, and he gave this floor plan to guess who? None other than the U.S. government, the FBI, and the police. So the police, in turn, kicked in the doors, cold-bloodedly murdered Fred Hampton and Mark Clark in their sleep, okay, and fired dozens and dozens and dozens, hundreds of bullets into that apartment, wounded many, many other people. But their target, their primary target, of course, was Fred Hampton and Mark Clark. And this O'Neill character, thanks to his collaboration and complicity with these devils, and that's what they were and what they still are, was responsible for the blatant, terrible, indescribable murder of brother, comrade, brother Fred and brother Mark, and the wounding of the other sisters and brothers in that apartment. And this is what they do. We need to understand that. This never stopped. This was under a program called COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, to frame, to set up, to imprison, and to murder dissenters. And this has not stopped. That's why we have the so-called, this country has the so-called Patriot Act, which is anything but patriotic. It goes, it's totally unconstitutional. But my point is simply that these are the kinds of things that are being continued under the Obama regime, the Obama-Biden regime. These things are being continued, and our audience needs to be aware of that. Nothing has changed unless it's only gotten worse.
And, you know, that's really an amazing story, because I was living in Chicago during that period of time. And matter of fact, I graduated in 1967 from John Marshall High School, which was on, I think, either the day he was murdered on Monroe Street or either Adams Street, one or the other. But whatever it was right down the street. Marshall High School is 3200 West, and I think this was the 2500, if I'm correct, 2800, whatever it was. But what made it so remarkable, it really gave people actually really wanted to start doing things. I know I myself, we went to a church, me and my brothers, and we have made a pledge to join, you know, the Black Panther Party, and we was going to make sure that the pigs don't continue to kill and destroy our community. And I believe when that happened, I think that was my first year of college, whatever it was, if I remember correctly. It's kind of fuzzy exactly what happened, but I know in 1968 where I was, so that makes it even easier. But it tells you what's going on and what's been going on for years. The FBI, the sheriff department, state police, city police, it don't make a difference. They all do the same thing. They all go out here and get people to inform on other folks, and they pay them. And I think that's what the article is saying, that, you know, we sit around here, and here's the thing that's going on now. You don't have to pay people a lot of money. You see, you see a lot of times people, in some cases, like the Dixie Five, Fort Dixon, I think that's what I was reading that. Now, I would imagine they paid them a lot of money because they was Muslims, and they went out and they did what they had to do in order, because I believe they even the FBI purchased some guns for them. But whatever it was, it's something that people need to know about. People would never believe that the FBI, I'm talking about the Federal Bureau of Investigation, would go around bribing people, bribing witnesses, paying people to go in and lie on other people, and you not knowing it. What makes this thing so incredible, we sit at home and watch TV rather than actually be right in the middle of really what's going on, because most people don't want the headache. But I tell you, that is, you know, that is a tremendous article, and I'm so happy that you sent that, you sent, you know, to print it off. But reason, it just didn't print right, but I got most of it out, and I think I can add the words that need to be in it, that what the words should be. And, I got a chance. I didn't get a chance to really, which I should have did before I even came on my show. If I would have thought about it, I would have printed it off a little bit earlier so I can add a few things. And then there's other articles in there that I was able to read because I understood where they was coming from. And that was the only reason. But I tell you, Larry, that is a true. You said this is something that everybody should read. You are 100% correct. And people need to know. And, you know, and by you yourself, you were right in the middle at that time, was right in the middle of all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the reality is, yes, you're right. I was a section leader in the Black Panther Party. I was very close to some of the national leaders of the party, Huey P. Newton and others, worked hard in the party. And you know, in fact, I'm it's ironic that you bring this up, brother, because I'm actually working on an article at this very time. I just stopped working on this piece to be, you know, to be on the program. But the article is on the Black Panther Party, and I'm talking about the various programs of the Black Panther Party, the breakfast programs, the free breakfast programs, the free clinic programs, the free clothing programs. That's just to name a few. And because the party the Black Panther Party was so effective nationwide in setting up these programs in service to the people, just everyday people. And by the way, it wasn't limited to black people. Anybody, it was set up in black communities. But anyone could come in and avail themselves if they were in need of these programs, okay? And the response, of course, of the local police, of the state police, and of the federal government with brutal, brutal repression to set us up any way they possibly could. And when I say any way, they would use any and everything. You may recall how they did Dr. King. They accused him of a quote-unquote sexual indiscretion, supposedly with some other woman, and
right.
Told him, remember that? And told
this was
the federal government, the FBI, the same government running around here talking about they love King. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They told the brother to, you know, to commit suicide. Otherwise, and King said, you're going to do what you're going to do, because I'm going to continue to in this struggle. And just like you say, Reverend Pinckney, you stick and move, stick and move.
That's it.
And, you know, we got to be aware of what we're dealing with. This is not to make us paranoid. It's just to have common sense and understand what we are dealing with. We are dealing with a vicious, unprincipled, amoral, way beyond immoral, amoral, no moral whatsoever, government and government agencies and bureaucracy. They have no compunction whatsoever. Therefore, we must be more determined than ever before. And as you said, turn that blasted television off and understand that we need to be organizing with and for each other.
And, you know, here's the thing, too, Larry. You know, people talk about Martin Luther King, how everybody love him now, and he was the greatest thing since ice cream. But when he was living, you know, when you talk about the FBI, and you talk about what they did to King, you see, and in that same year, I think Fred Hampton and Martin Luther King, they both died in 1968, if I'm correct. You may have to correct me on that, because I know King died in 1968.
Right.
And I'm almost positive that Fred Hampton died also. He was murdered in 1968 also. But I'm not sure, but I think that was my first year of college when he was killed. And if I'm correct, I think that's what that was all about.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and the way everything, and then when you tell people these things, Larry, especially with our government, the way they operate and the way they've been doing things, most folks would not believe it. They
right.
think that, you know, propaganda, that's all you're doing. You're running off at the mouth. You have no facts about this stuff. But we do have the facts.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
do have the facts. And we need to let people know. And any way I can, we're going to get the word out. We're going to tell folks about what the FBI do. We're going to tell them how they infiltrate these different organizations, how they even plant drugs on folks, guns on folks, guns in your house. They do. They wiretap. Just recently, a guy had his a GPS connected into his car.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been talking about that. They even talked about it on TV, which said
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we know it's illegal, but they do whatever they want. They are
mm-hmm.
the law.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And we need, you said it. You said a mouthful, my brother. You said a mouthful.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the two things, if I can just real quickly go back, the two things that are very interesting about the murders of Dr. King and Brother Fred Hampton,
right,
at the party, the two things that are also kind of interesting, both were murdered, both of these folks were these fighters, these true freedom fighters, were murdered on the fourth day of the month. King
mm-hmm.
was murdered on April 4th, 1968, and actually Fred was murdered the following year, but also December 4th, 1969.
Okay,
and,
absolutely, okay.
Yeah, but both on the fourth day, I'm not saying the fourth day has any significance, but I just thought I'd throw that out for what it's worth. After these pigs, these swine, you know, these devils they're going to hit you whenever they can hit you. And this is what we need to understand. But go ahead, my brother, I'm sorry.
But you said something that was really powerful, that, you know, we still, you know, that the fourth of the month, we don't know whether that's a coincidence or not.
Right.
When you think about it. And, you know, two real heroes. Someone who we love. But listen, let's bring on Ralph. Ralph, are you there?
Oh, I'm there, brothers, and I'm listening and enjoying every minute, because I say when I get on this radio and listen to you gentlemen, it's an education. And we must continue to educate people and keep those articles coming, Larry. It's just so wonderful the way in which you it becomes entertaining reading while you're learning something, and that's a wonderful ability that you have. But one of the things we must remember that this is historical. This is the way it has been since Europe met Africa. It's continuous. Ali Masri wrote on the decivilization of Africa by Europe. They decivilized us. And as Queen Mother Moore recently said, 20 years ago, they continue to denature us. And then if we look at the drug years, when they brought drugs and cracks into our community, it weakens the people. They decivilized us, denature us, weaken us, and then we're set up for anything. When they come and they approach somebody who's already had a history of being weakened, decivilized, etc., then we become easy marks. Do this to your people. Somebody with courage would spit in their face.
But you know, Ralph, here's the thing that and you can answer this. One of the things that I know that, you know, they have spent a lot of money to figure out exactly what we, as Black Americans, would do. They have spent money in laboratories doing different surveys to find out what we'll do in certain situations. You see,
yeah.
And when it comes to like you said, well, that's not natural. Well, what they do is not natural. What they're trying to do, they're trying to figure out what right now. What can they do to actually destroy all of us, not
exactly.
just a few of us? They're trying to figure out, they say, maybe we'll let them destroy themselves. You see, but that's a slow process. So I'm thinking right now, they're in some kind of laboratory behind some kind of closed doors trying to figure out what they can do. They have done everything they can to try to neutralize us. They do it with their laws. And their laws are just what they are, their laws, and they're designed only for us. But what can we do? You know, what can we do? Ralph, I want you to ask that. Ralph,
You're doing what we must do, making people aware of what's happening. I'm sure everybody in your listening audience remembers and is exposed to the universities having these young, charming students come into our neighborhoods and do surveys, ask us questions, ask the children questions. Yes, they're setting us up to kill us. They're studying us. And we all know this question. We talk about AIDS, and now we have a study that recently came out. We have heard that AIDS came from monkeys, right? Mm-hmm. Now we find out that they've had 50 monkeys, the rhesus monkeys, various monkeys have been trying to inject them with AIDS. They're totally immune to AIDS. Therefore, the question comes up again. Where did AIDS come from? And then they put a grid over where this AIDS broke out. And over this grid, when it showed where AIDS broke out, there's always some laboratory in there run by a French government, an American government, some government had a laboratory in that area. So now, I don't know, is that coincidence that where the AIDS broke out, there was a laboratory in that area? I suggest not. So they're always working on a plan to see us dead. And when you talk about seeing us dead, I can't help myself. I said a while back, I'm not going to talk about Obama. It's not about him. It's about us. How did we go for this? But you know, this sugar-coated bullet, this, you know, we get shot by it and we love it. And they bring him right to the top. This is something they did to us. This Negro gringo, and I use that in the most pejorative manner, is somebody that they set up that we loved. What about us? They're killing us in every way they can. What must we do? We must understand what their game is. Their game is they want us dead.
Absolutely.
And once we put our brains around that, then we begin to protect ourselves. But it's very difficult because you must stand to say who you are and then identify yourself with the people, and then that makes you a target. But
absolutely,
we can't stop identifying ourselves as to who we are. We just
absolutely
have to do our job better, and you're doing great work out here. Larry,
hey, appreciate
Reverend.
It. Larry, let me ask you something, Larry. How do you think, what is the best way for us to deal with this situation?
Well, my brother, I don't know if I can actually say I know of a best way, but I can certainly
a way. Let's say a way.
A way. Okay. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I can certainly say wholeheartedly that we as a people collectively, and in this case, black people, but also white, brown, red, and yellow people, we first of all must disengage ourselves, take ourselves out of this conundrum, if you will, this mire of propaganda that we're constantly getting from the media, what I call the corporate stream media. We must take ourselves out of that. We must disconnect ourselves from that. And then, as we do that, we must take very, very specific actions, and let me name some of those actions. For one thing, we must begin to seriously pull our young people aside and teach them the truth. Tell them the real deal. Explain to them that this crap that they see on the computer screens and television screens is not meant for them. This is nothing but poison. This is meant to poison their minds, to keep them sidetracked, diverted from the fact that their lives are in serious, serious jeopardy. So I'm talking about teaching, true education, what we used to call in the Black Panther Party, education that is relevant to the people. That's what we need to do. And we need to educate each other about that. That's one thing. Another thing, anybody, and all of us can do that. All of us, grandmothers, grandfathers, aunties, uncles, everybody, daddies, mamas, older kids can educate younger kids, and we need to be educating them and each other. But that's one thing. Another thing that we need to do is to emphasize to each other that we must support each other. For example, the sister that was on the program last week, Tiffany, Sister Tiffany, whose father some people might say killed. I'm going to say murdered because the
murdered.
Way the prosecution
that is the correct word. That's what I say.
Yeah, I mean that was murder. Okay, but we must organize both locally, as in Benton Harbor, as in New York, as in California, as in Minnesota, as in Illinois, and nationally, we must organize and come together with very, very specific objectives. We must not be sidetracked from those objectives. That's point two. Point three, something else, and we should do this constantly. We want to sit on our butts and whine and complain and pretend that our whining and complaining means anything. Let me, with all due respect, remind folks of what happened to the people in the 30s and 40s in Germany and in Italy and in other fascist countries. Those who whined and complained and did nothing and did not organize found themselves in concentration camps and ultimately in ovens. And I mean real oven.
Let me ask you this. One of the things that I've been saying for years is that the older generation may have to die off before we actually become who we really are. What do you think about that?
I'm afraid of it. You see, because there's too many of the younger people who do not understand. You see, we think, as Zari was saying, we have to stop complaining. We think bad things were done to us. I'm looking at the bad things that are done to our children. We did not know we were not the victims of this super outrageous propaganda machine such as television. Now they got flat screen, 3D, and it comes at you 24/7. When television first came out, it went off at 10, 11 at night. 2 o'clock in the morning, you got white space. Now they have this propaganda, and we fought for the schools, and they're taking over more of the schools. We fought for integration. We had the southern schools, and people learned in those southern schools to read, write, and count. So now they're taking every little bit of possibility to learn from us, and they're indoctrinating us. So I'm afraid with those of us who had a little bit of oppression, if we die off, not all we'll have left is those who have had a lot of oppression, constant propaganda. Imagine this. Back in the 60s, when we knew to fight to get black history, and I say there is no black history, there's only history. But what they did was they kept us out of history. Mm-hmm. They lied. They did not include us. So then we had to say, put us in. Now we have to get back to history. Those people who fought for that had certain consciousness. Now, we don't even know to fight for it. I'm afraid. And as Lynn Stewart says, you know, I don't want to talk about old people retiring. We have learned something. We must pass this on. We must become more active now than we were before because we have to educate the young. We have to make them understand what they do not know. We must make them feel. How do you make them feel? And what you gentlemen are doing, telling the truth. Larry, you
absolutely
write wonderful articles. I wonder how many young people can read them.
Absolutely. Ralph, that's another good thing, too. What we got to do, we got to take the time out and start schooling these kids. Most of them cannot read. I was saying, you know, there's some things you with the Internet and these video games, all they're doing is concentrating on the video game. There's a lot of things that they can fix if something goes wrong with the computer, but they probably can't spell it.
There you go. How are they going to get to it? And this is a thing that was not done to us. You know, they just segregated us. Keep it. Put your hand down. Shut up. But we were there to learn it anyway. Now young people don't have that opportunity. And I say, wow, I don't know what would have happened if I grew up in this present age. You know, the worst thing I could think of was a beer or a drink. And I'm saying, well, I didn't like that, you know, because I was taste-oriented. Well, now they got everything out here. Designer.
Here's something, too. Larry, do you know that they got stuff there? They're making drugs right now, just like when they made the crack cocaine, you know. And I don't know whether it's true or false, but it appeared to me that less people are using crack cocaine now and switching to these other drugs. I'm not really out in the streets to really know. But the way what I see now, I see less people using crack and using ecstasies and all this other kind of stuff in that meth. I don't know nothing about meth, so I can't sit here and talk about it. I don't know nothing about it. All I know that is they call it meth. And it's if you don't be careful, it'll blow up. That's all I know. So if you have any information on it, why don't you school me on it? Anybody?
Well, I don't know how much schooling I can give you on it, but I can say this as to its source. The source is certainly the government itself. And why do I say that?
Absolutely.
I say that because the government, some time ago, some years ago, in fact, the San Jose Mercury News in San Jose, California, came out with an in-depth article of how the Central Intelligence Agency, with the knowledge of the DEA, the so-called Drug Enforcement Agency, the federal government, were in fact involved in not only the pushing of hard drugs, but also laundering money, et cetera, both on a national and international level to bring in these drugs to this country and primarily to poor communities, not just black communities, but first and foremost black communities, but brown communities, and yes, poor white communities as well. So the source of it remains the same. I'm not in the position to say the details of these drugs. I have enough common sense, however, to know that they are debilitating. They are debilitating. They destroy you. They destroy us. They destroy our communities, our thinking capacities. Therefore, we take no action. We become drugged, like Brother Malcolm talked about. Like Brother Malcolm X talked about when he said how they shoot that Novocaine in you. You know, when you go to the dentist and you're bleeding all over the place and they shoot that Novocaine in you and you're inactive, right? And meanwhile, you're bleeding. Okay, and this is what all I can say, my brother, on that.
Well, it's an interesting thing. I would like to point this out. What is happening, because we talk about the government is this all-knowing with all of these abilities to do things, and now they find themselves in a problem with drugs. And here's the problem. We know that Osama bin Laden is supposed to be the devil of devils, the enemy. So when Osama bin Laden and his group was in Afghanistan, they banned the growing of the poppy, which produces heroin. They had zero tolerance of poppy. You could lose your hand. You could lose your life if you produced poppy. So what did they do? What did the Americans do? They came in with a group they called the Northern Alliance, bandits, a warlord, and they says, if you join us against the Taliban and Osama bin Laden, you can grow the poppy seed. So now they started.
Osama bin Laden. You hear an Osama bin Laden audience. Go ahead.
All right. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Thank you. And so what happened was they allowed them to grow the poppy plant again. And they ended up right now, they produce 114% of the heroin that the world can use. So now they're saying, we want to, we're going to have to negotiate with the Northern Alliance now. We're going to have to negotiate with Osama bin Laden. We're going to have to negotiate with the Taliban. Well, what are they going to do about the drugs? Their guys, the CIA guys, have been growing the drugs, and they've been bringing them into the United States all over the world. Now, what are they going to do when they talk to the Taliban? The Taliban says no on drugs. So they, you see, they've painted themselves into a corner where they cannot negotiate. Now, the reason why I'm saying this is, you see, this, we cannot think of this American, this European government as being all-powerful. They make a lot of mistakes. And I think we should all be aware of it and watch it. And now they have free travel, admitted on the corporate media. The Taliban leaders are able to travel to go to negotiations with what's-his-name in Afghanistan. Well, what are they going to do with the Northern Alliance, who they have joined up with to produce and ship the drugs? What are they going to do? They're in a bind. So we must take heart that these people make alliances, Mohammed Karzai, the Northern Alliance, and then they can't undo it. So we should all keep our eye on watching to see them sing, dance, hoom, and ha in a position that they cannot work themselves out of. So that should give us heart. They have stuck us with drugs in the city and in the country. They have miseducated us. They're going to privatization. They're doing the whole nine yards, but they're painting themselves into a background, into a corner.
And, you know, and,
what we
and,
must
here's
do
some Bible, Ralph. Here's,
on,
here's
Reverend.
Some Bible, too, that we need to know about, too. See, we kind of understand how heroin came into this country. We kind of know how cocaine came into this country. And, you know, we also know how, them rocks, they call them rocks, you know what I'm saying, came into the country. But I'm still real confused about the meth. See, I don't know nothing about that meth. I believe it was made by the government, like you said, Larry, and have now been placed. But it's this, see, black people don't like meth. It's mostly the Caucasians. So, you have to tell me. I don't know nothing about it. That's something. You say, well, Reverend Pinckney know about everything. I don't know about that meth. I believe my next door neighbor was making meth because it smelled the whole neighborhood up.
It was very
easy. And you can smell it.
Yes.
And I believe he was, and I believe they knew he was. But the point was, you know, by them being Caucasians, they decided they weren't going to do anything about it. I tell you, these folks had one of the finest houses in the community until the mother died, and these kids moved over there and started pumping. I don't know what they was, but whatever it was, it left a stank in that house that you'll never forget. But my thing is this. Who is the person? I mean, we know that crack cocaine with the FBI and all that kind of stuff, but meth, are they bringing this stuff in to destroy the Caucasians now, the white folks? Can somebody
answer
that?
Well, you know what, they're not, first of all, and I think you've made a very excellent point, Reverend Pinckney. The fact is that what people need to understand is that no one, I repeat, no one is immune. And black people have been debilitated, but the target is all, it goes beyond black people. It's all
black and white.
It's black and white and everything
right
in between. And you know, let me just quickly segue to something else very quickly, and that is Ralph mentioned Afghanistan. The fact of the matter is that today, under this so-called democracy that people are dying for, and I say so-called, that U.S. troops and European troops and et cetera are dying for in Afghanistan, since the Taliban were removed, and I'm not saying the Taliban were angelic. I don't know of any group that is. But since they were removed, Afghanistan is now once again the highest producing country in the world, once again, of what? Those debilitating drugs, okay? Mm. And we saw the same thing occur. This is not new. We saw the same thing occur with the PRC, the People's Republic of China.
Right.
One of the reasons that Mao Zedong was hated vociferously. I mean, he was hated by the so-called West, that's the United States and Europe, was because because one of the first things that Mao did and told the millions and millions of Chinese is that, I understand who brought this stuff into our country, but it's not going to be tolerated. We are not going to tolerate it. And he proceeded. He commenced to cut the heroin use out, almost out completely. And these are the things that we need to be aware of. And we need to be aware that there's a market. They created. These governments created a market, the Western governments. And the market is none other than their own people right here in this country. Okay, so that's why I go back to your point, Reverend Pinckney. You're absolutely correct. This is not just the boundaries of the black communities. Indeed, it is all people. We are all the targets, all of us in this country and elsewhere.
Well, we have.
Do you think they're targeting the poor people?
Yes.
That's the issue. We have to add to that the influence of capitalism, because we have to remember that the European countries, mainly England, fought a war with China to make sure that the drugs were allowed in. And see, that's an education. And people say, what? Yes, they fought a war that the Chinese lost with the gunboat diplomacy of the Europeans. And they said, you're going to have poppy seed products into your country, opium trade. And there were the wars fought by the Europeans to put that into the community so that people shouldn't say, what, the government wanted drugs into our communities? Yes. When it suits them, they want it in. It's a part of capitalism. As Lynn Stewart says, the most perfect of the capitalistic policies is the drug policies that they have exported around the world, and it operates here at home. The CIA bringing cocaine in, you know, the Contras, the Iran-Contra thing, cocaine, guns, all of these things that this government that I happen to be under, not mine, I never used the term our government, this government is involved in all of these corruptions. And what is the root of that? Money. Capital.
That's right. And what you're saying now, you're saying that the United States government got their hands deep, not only in the heroin trade, but the cocaine trade also.
You got that right. And the fight in Colombia, they're putting all American troops down there to fight in Colombia, and they're fighting over what? Sure as hell ain't democracy. Excuse me, Reverend.
Yeah.
It sure isn't democracy. It's about dollars and who controls the cocaine trade. And they're destroying the trees, and it's destroying the environment, bringing cocaine in under their own auspices for that root of all evil. And we can discuss that, the root of all evil. Money, capitalism, and a falling capitalism. And one day, Reverend, you're going to have to assign a program to this whole issue of cocaine coming into the country.
And you know, and one of the things that, you know, we always need to talk about our federal government bringing these drugs in, because the average Joe around here would never believe that our government are the one who actually bringing these drugs in.
Exactly. They bring them in to make money off of it, and then
they arrest bring them in
to imprison and make money off of your butt in the prison.
That's right. That's an amazing thing when you think about it.
Yes, yes. And see, what you do is you educate people to this. People say, what? Yes, this is where we are, and this is what we're fighting against.
And then we talk about those denim ecstasy pills. Now, I know they could be made in a laboratory. You know, what are they used for? Do anybody know that?
Well, they're used to make money. One of the interesting things
What I'm saying, you know, okay, the ecstasy pills, are they used for any, for pain pills? Are they used for, like Novocaine is used to deaden your mouth or something like that? What are they used for, and why do we have so many floating around?
For pleasure. You know, there's people get recreational drugs for pleasure. Now, I've always been afraid of drugs. You know, and I stop and I see somebody, and they say, you know, he's a drug addict. And Richard Pryor was the greatest at this. He would, you know, like when he would imitate with love, He would imitate with love what happened to somebody who was on drugs.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I'm saying, hey, I can't do that. You know, yeah, I'm afraid. You know, don't ask me about it. Don't want to do it. Forget about it. So if you have sense enough to be afraid of something who can hurt you, you won't be pulled in on it. But you see, this ecstasy is a drug, as I understand, and I have to say I understand, never used it, because I'm afraid of it. What they say is it gives you a sex drive. And
mm-hmm.
I'm saying, all we black people, I'm saying, hey, we got too much sex already. With all these children we have that we don't take quite care of, you know, like, you know, you don't need that. But it's a drug that's supposed to make you relax, be more into a party mood. But the trick is, when you take it, you have to have water. So they have these big raves with 1,000. That's an put up on your computer, and all kids gather, and people sell ecstasy cheap. But then they'll sell water for $5 a bottle, because if you have ecstasy and don't get water, you will die. So therefore, you know, people peddling water at $5 a bottle to these young kids who are dying if they don't buy it, and if they run out of money. It's about capitalism, money, making money on this drug that people feel they need to have more a greater sexual drive. And I guess you should have people call in, people have used it, and tell, you know, how does it work. And I've also heard that people use a certain drug that works, you know, to calm horses, and they throw that in too. And I'm saying, hey, you know, just the thought of that is never mind. I don't need that. But
wow.
Young kids,
you know,
they never had that.
There was a guy here, he had some ecstasy pills in jail. He had 35 of them. And they gave him 45 years in prison.
Whoa.
They caught him with, well, they never caught him with it. Somebody said he had some. And they say he had smuggled them into the jail, but we don't really believe that. We believe that that was just something they came up with. And I was trying to read up on ecstasy pills. And there's really no law, you know, in the book. That all they say is, you know, you have to have a prescription to have it. And by him not having a prescription, that was the penalty. But it don't accumulate to 45 years. But there's no law really on the books about it. And
well, we have to remember, we're just getting in, as I say, we didn't have this as kids. This is new stuff. And now one of the latest revelations is that HIV is a designer drug. So we have to keep our eye on that. We're going to have to watch and see how that develops. And see, I'm sure that it's going to all end up at the same place, at the doorstep of the same people who have been trying to oppress us and been successful in suppressing us all along. You know, the name of the game is the same.
Hey, Larry, let me ask you a question. Do you think this ecstasy pill, do you think they have something to do with the FBI bringing them in? Or because I hear all these young folks with these, where are they coming from?
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is if these folks have the technology and the capability, and I'm talking about the FBI, the DEA, and all these other government agencies, these people can listen into you without being anywhere near you. In other words,
right,
they can
absolutely
listen to your conversations, even in your home. Don't have to be physically anywhere near you. They have satellites that can pinpoint the hairs on your head. Now, that's common. Okay, they got that. Now, what common sense should tell us that if they've got all this technology, which they do, and they use it, then clearly, at the very least, the government and its agencies have to be complicitous with this stuff. They have to be complicitous in the spreading of this crap. And the reality is, that's why I tell people, turn off that blasted corporate stream media. What they tell us is, oh, we're making this drug raid, that drug raid. Yeah, they're making raids all right. It's like what they do is they go in, they make a raid, and then they make sure there's plenty more available. Okay, they scoop up people, and that's another way that they turn people to make them informants. what we were talking about at the very beginning of the program, okay, mm-hmm. is debilitating on all levels. It is debilitating. And I just want to sneak this in real quick, that the Black Panther Party, one of the rules of the party was quite clear. At no time during party business, no drugs were allowed, including marijuana. No drugs, okay? If you got caught doing something like that, you were expelled from the party. It was very simple, very clear.
Wow.
Okay, contrary to popular myth. And by the way, the month of October, this month, is Black Panther Party History Month because the Black Panther Party was, in fact, founded in October of 1966 and before it was destroyed approximately 20 years later by the vicious federal government, state, and local government.
Wow, that is something. And, you know, we started out talking about informers, but listen, we only got 4 minutes left in the show. And what I'm going to do, I want Larry, I want you to take, I'm going to raffle, you take the first 2 minutes. Larry, you take the last two, and just leave me 30 seconds. That's all I need. Go ahead, Ralph.
All right. I just came from a meeting a little earlier on political prisoners to make black people aware of our political prisoners, those who fought to make things better for the rest of us. And we've just gotten over this, you know, the idea of black political prisoners. Political prisoners are people who gave up their lives for the rest of us. So they only come under one rubric, political prisoner. So I just came from that meeting, and I just discussed a letter from Lynn that was written by Sundiata Okola. And he says, the greatest faith of all, never mind religion, the greatest faith of all is that held by political prisoners that the rest of us out here are going to get it together and free them one day. And I just wanted to pass that on. You know, like Sekou Odinga, and we could go on, Mumia Abu-Jamal forever, for too long. But it is possible for us to get them out as long as we remember them. So remember our political prisoners, all of them. Thank you so much, brothers.
And go right here. Larry?
I just want to quickly say that it is, I want to thank our audience again for listening to us, for being out there and taking in what we're saying and hopefully doing something about it. I want to indicate that this struggle is a protracted struggle. It will go on, and we must stand up. We must fight, as Bob Marley said, you know, stand up. Stand up. We need to stand up collectively, black, white, brown, red, yellow people. This is a struggle that will last a long time. And as they say, La Sima Tushinde Mbilashaka, we shall succeed without a doubt. But the only way we can succeed is by standing up. As Malcolm, Brother Malcolm X said, it's time to stop singing and start swinging.
That's it. It don't get no better than that. And I just want to say, I want everybody just to continue to pound Whirlpool. I mean, you have made a major difference. And if you still want to call, you can reach them at 269-923-5000. Tell them to stop stealing the land unless we're going to stop buying your products. Also, I want to say to everybody, I want to say, Lynn Stewart, we love you. We love you. We love you, and I know that if we continue to stand, that we're going to be able to release you one day. And we know, and we've been talking about the Black Panther Party today, and Lynn Stewart is one of the individuals who actually stood up for the Black Panther Party. And I really, really appreciate that, because you don't find too many lawyers. There's not a whole lot of lawyers I like. And I tell you, Lynn Stewart is a lawyer who I like. And I tell you, she have went beyond the call of duty. And I just want to say to the family of Eddie P., we are still standing for you. And I want everybody, I want to get that. Here's what we want to do with them. We want to get a letter-writing campaign. I'm going to put a letter out. I think you already have it, Ralph. You already have it, Larry. A basic letter that we want out and we want people to write. And we want the people to write to this prosecutor because they believe that they are above the law. So that's why we have to take this baby to a whole different level. This is something we can do because they always think that we as African-American, black folks, can't do anything. But the key thing is that we have to stay on top of this thing, and we got to use the term stick and move. Stick and move. Let them know that we need, and we need everybody who's listening to the program, we need your help to save Eddie P, because not the person that murdered him will get off. And on that note, we are all out of time. I tell you, I just love it.
Love and sister.
Yes, listen, that's beautiful. But listen, let's do what we can and take this baby to a whole different level, and let's see what happens.
All right.
So,
all right.
Listen, and I will be talking to both of y'all because we got to come up with a game plan. I went to the prosecutor, now to the county board commissioner meeting on Thursday, and was talking about this guy Michael Sepik and the guy Scott Sanford, and they said, well, we don't want you to be calling names. Well, if you don't call names, how you know who the perpetrator is?
Mm-hmm.
If they were black, you wouldn't mind me calling names.
Right.
But look, we need to talk more, and we will. We set up a program where we're going to show folks we can do, and with the key word here is a letter-writing program. Get as many letters together as we can, and I'll take them to the prosecutor office. So let's see how that works. But listen, I'm going to have say goodnight to y'all, and y'all have a very, very good day, and enjoy all this good weather.
Love you, bro.
And love you, love you, love you all, and take care now.
All right.
Bye now.
Good night.
Bye-bye.